If you're listening to this, welcome to the experiment. The Sip Mightily podcast begins now. We had our lady friends that wanted to be involved, and at first we was like, nah, this is just for the fellas. But then, like, they had knowledge and things like that. And, you know, my girlfriend, now my wife, we just got married in January here in L.A. And,
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And so, you know, she's been a part of it, and it's just like a big vibe. And the awesome thing is, like, we realized that there are so many people that want to feel included and want to feel like they can take part in understanding what bourbon and scotch and whiskey is and cognac. And, you know, I saw what you were doing with Taste Select Repeat, and I saw what you're doing with the Barrel Picks. And I was like, yo, that's like, I was actually really inspired about that. So this is my long-winded word vomit way of saying, like, yo, thank you. I'm a little inspired by kind of what you've been doing. And, you know, maybe when some of this, you know, during this time and then moving forward, you know, we have an opportunity to collab. So that would, I would love to be able to do that at some point. So what led you down the path to decide, hey, look, man, I really want to be about this barrel pick life. I want to start to make things more inclusive for people when it comes to whiskey and bourbon, especially for where you are being in the Northeast. And then kind of taking that mindset and starting to work with bourbonites and things like that.
All right. Well, here you go. You got hot takes right here. So
let's do it.
I am not working at Def Jam anymore.
Okay.
I left. And I basically left to start this company.
Nice.
You know. So I just got to a, I got to a point. I've been working in, first I started in journalism, obviously, and I've gone through various forms of media. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've been celebrity media, I've done TV, I've done music business, I've just done pretty much, everything, print, television, digital, Complex. And during the time when I was at Complex, we launched that site, First We Feast, which then became, started like Hot Ones. And while we were doing that, it was when I really started to like get deep into thinking about spirits. Since then, I've just been dabbling and gotten friendly with like people at liquor stores, started to learn more. And kind of the thing that I noticed was, they're, even though I had friends who, we drink a lot and drink a lot of different things, like it just really wasn't any, there wasn't any thought about like kind of us. And I say us as in like people of color, just basically it's just something you notice being in like media, like when things are directed at you and when they're not,
Right.
So kind of think about being into something and it being like the opposite of like, Jordans or something. And there's like literally no kind of regard for, you as a consumer, what you bring, blah, blah, blah. And it's just something that's just very recognizable. But for the last few years, I started working with a guy named Sean Kim at 58 Wine and Liquor in New York. And I helped him do my first barrel pick almost 2 years ago. It was 2 years on National Whiskey Day. Since then, I've done 19 barrel picks. They've all been American whiskey. So bourbons and ryes and blends. And I just really got into it, but pumped up my knowledge. And I had the opportunity to go with him to do a barrel pick. And that's how I got started. And it was Four Roses. That was the DIY one. And now we're on DIY 9, and I've also done a bunch of other ones. So during that time, I was working at Def Jam, and it was really close to this liquor store. And so I was just doing a lot of different stuff. And I was doing it just as a hobby for fun. And then I really got to about a year and a half in, sometime in the middle of last year. And I was like, wow, so I've done all these barrel picks. I've done Four Roses. I've done Two Whistle Pig. I've done a couple Four Roses. I've, went to Finger Lakes and actually had them do a blend of two different barrels for me. Like I've done, Russell's Reserve. I just looked up and I was like, I just got into this for fun. And now I've actually done a significant amount. And not only am I doing the barrel, helping with the barrel picks, because, you really can't do it as one person. You need multiples. Right. But like, I'm the guy that's designing the labels. I'm trying to figure out like what we're doing on social media to make people interested. So I'm driving the marketing of this stuff to the store and to these other places. And I was grateful for the opportunity that had been given by some of these retailers I work with. But I was just like, why can't I just do this myself?
Right.
So, and then also, if you think about it a different way, which was I started to think, well, I've been doing media for like 25 years, literally a quarter century, media journalism. And I was like, I don't know if I want to do that for the rest of my life. Do I want to work in, at this point? Like, it started as journalism, you know, it went to into some other spaces, and now a lot of the media and marketing are together. And I was like, so it's not really the what I got into it for in the beginning. And even though I've had an amazing career and done all these things, like, I just don't know that this is what I want to do with the rest of my life. I'm thinking, like, you know, I'm married, I have children, like, I have a lot of knowledge, I'm educated, I have some money in a bank, like, I've worked hard to get to where I'm at. And like, if I'm not going to take a chance and do something I'm really interested in now at this point, then when am I going to do it?
Right.
You know, like the day before they put me in the grave. So, yeah. When I realized, like, wow, this just isn't something you do for fun, because like, you like to go to Kentucky and you have friends there and you know, and blah, blah, blah. But like, you actually have a pretty high skill level at this just from working on it and being around it and just putting, you know, it's just what happens when you, like, you know, get into something that you actually enjoy doing. It's surprising how good you can get, how fast.
Yeah.
So at that point, I just said, well, I'm basically a fourth tier in a three-tier system, right? You have basically the distillery, the wholesaler, and the retailer. And so I was in this as, you know, you could basically say, like, a marketer who's, you know, obviously a product selector or a product creator, but, you know, there's already an established three-tier system of how people get paid in the spirits industry. And so to be an outside tier in that just kind of leaves you as like doing it, getting clout for it, but not really getting compensated.
Yeah.
And so at that point, when I started to realize, okay, I'm good enough at this, I know enough for it to be more than a hobby, I then said, well, then how do I make this business? And so I got down with another, started talking with another guy, Pierre Auguste, who's at least I have whiskey. He's a really excellent whiskey photographer. And, also a black man. Mm-hmm. And we were collaborating on some pics with Sean, and then start saying, you know, we could do this. So between our expertise, we could totally do this. We had just a lot of people like asking us about the pics. The pics were selling out. And I was like, you know, our people are liking our stuff as much as they're liking anyone else's. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so what do we do? And at that point we decided, well, I think our first entry point is to be in control of what we want to pick and who we can sell it to. And part of that just was, there were some distilleries we worked with last year that we did with Sealbox and not with my man Sean from 58 Wine and Liquor, because he just didn't have the floor space to do it. So we wanted to do a craft distillery, and he didn't want to do it because he just didn't have the floor space to hold the bottle. So we ended up working with Sealbox on that, and that was the Finger Lakes distilling the weeded whiskey that we blinded against all the Wellers that won in that competition.
Right.
On our site.
Pretty awesome.
We just realized, you know, just I came to this, you know, it just dawned on me, well, I want to do this, I'm good at this, and if I'm relying on someone else to be able to purchase the product, then like I can only do what they want to do, and what they want to do may have limitations based on where their store is, etc. And so at that point, I just set out to get a retail liquor license. Which actually we've applied for, and we've already gotten our preliminary approval. We're in our 60-day waiting period while they, you know, placard our business. But it will give us the right to buy from distilleries, buy from wholesalers, and sell to people online only. So it won't be a brick-and-mortar store, but essentially it will allow us to go out and pick the spirits we want to pick, number one, for, like, our social club, and purchase them and sell them directly to our members. So that's a big bonus for us, right? Because we just want to do creative and interesting things. Like, it's fun to go pick at these amazing, do barrel picks at these amazing distilleries, but like, you're not going to go to Buffalo Trace and say to them, hey, I got an idea. Like, why don't we blend this Weller with this Blanton's? And like, they're not doing that. It's just,
right.
It's too small of a thing for their business. It doesn't, even the amazing marketing of it doesn't benefit them.
Right.
So if you want to do like things other than just go pick barrels, then you have to work with more craft distilleries. And in that case, you know, part of making that work is helping them with their marketing, helping them with their social media, you know, and the return on all of that is you often get credit for being the people who kind of discovered a new distillery. So I think of myself as a person who did that for Finger Lakes with the Mackenzie bourbons for sure. Since we were, you know, we did two barrels with them. One was a blend of a weeded bourbon and a spelted bourbon.
Mm.
And then the second one was the release of the Weeded Barrel, and that was the one that also beat the Wellers. So we're just trying to do like new and interesting and cool stuff, and like follow up and just take barrel picking to its next logical conclusion, which is finding new barrels, blending them, being more involved with the distillery on, you know, what they're actually making, as opposed to just taking what they're making and saying, oh, I'm going to pick the best one of those.
Do you have a name for the online store? Are you keeping everything Taste Select Repeat? What do you think?
It's going to be Taste Select Repeat. And okay. So we're hoping we'll be fully up, I think, like end of August, early September.
Got it. And will the selections be all your barrel picks and blends, yeah, and then other crafts, distillers that you guys like to work with? That's going to be your primary like selection that'll be available on the store?
Yeah, our initial selection will be barrel picks that we've done, either picks that we've done with other people that we made, like reissue some, that we held some back to, you know, for our launch, or picks that we've just been working on this year. So right now, I think before we actually fully launch, we have, we just dropped a Wathens pick, We have a Four Roses in a week or so. Then we have two Wilderness Trails with Justin's House of Bourbon in Lexington. And then we have two Russell's Reserves with Sean at 58 Wine in July. And then from there, we'll probably move forward with hopefully another New Riff, a Taconic, a Woodenville, and we got a couple other things lined up. So,
okay. So I want to take a step back because you mentioned your collective, and that's the thing that we do with Brown Liquor Collective is it's really, you know, my ultimate goal is to be as inclusive as possible. Right.
Yes.
And so, and then I start thinking about the other advocates and ambassadors that kind of emerge within the group and things like that. So you spoke about your relationship with Pierre and you spoke about your relationship with Sean. I'm curious, like, what are your conversations like now? Like when you're, now that Corona is, it happened, and it's like, well, because now you almost have more time to brainstorm, you have more opportunity to think about like the future, like, yeah, how have your conversations changed since the pandemic hit?
There are a limited amount of kind of whiskey clubs, social clubs in New York City where we live, and they're pretty homogenous.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though you know, I knew some of the people from these clubs and Pierre had been to some of their meetings and stuff, I think the general feeling that we got as men of color was like, although I share this thing whiskey, I have this thing whiskey in common with these people, and I love it dearly, and they love it dearly, and that's a bonding moment. Like, mm-hmm, these just aren't the type of events that I want to go to.
Right.
Like, I'm not gonna enjoy the event and the surrounding other than this thing that we have in common called whiskey. And we started to talk about it more. Like what, when's it ideal for us when we're having our spirits? And it's like, well, you know, same thing as you. We like our friends to be around. We like it to be like a fun, lively conversation. We like there to be not just be men, to be inclusive and have women, because they bring a whole different thing to it. It's like, when was the last time you went to a party with all dudes and it was awesome?
Right, right. Never. It's never happened. Never on earth.
I think in general, what happened was we banded together along with some other guys around New York that we'd met also through social media, who were just a diverse group of guys who were just looking for a more diverse group of guys. And we were at different levels of knowledge about whiskey as well. So some people were beginners. Some people have been in it a long time. Some people drink world whiskey. Some people only drink American whiskey. Mm-hmm. Some people like barrel, you know, some people are more interested in barrel picks. Some people are interested in allocated items. Some people will only say, I'm only, you know, buying bottles that are available on the shelves. I'm not going to hunt. So we just had a diverse group of people that also included people of color and women, and we wanted to do all of our events so that they were inclusive in that it was like going to be comfortable and fun and educational.
Right, right, right.
So that's how we started doing our events. And so we just drafted a different group of people to come to those events. You know, they were like, oh, I've been interested in whiskey, but I would never go to one of these other events because it's intimidating or I would feel out of place. And we were like, look, I always say the same thing. You like what you like. And, you know, the more you taste, the more you train your palate. Sometimes it turns out you like a $30 bottle of whiskey over a $400 bottle of whiskey. So what?
Right, right, right.
This is what it is. Everyone has, you know, everyone has a different palate, a different taste at different times of the year. And so rather than make people feel a certain type of way about their knowledge level or their collection, et cetera. It was just, the point was, let's bring people together. Let's have fun. Let's make sure it's a good time. And let's make sure that everybody leaves having learned something. And so when we do our events, whether they're with a brand or they're just a blind tasting, we just try to make sure that, like, it feels cool and homey, you know, and there's no dumb questions. There's, you know, nothing like that. Like, everything is on the table and nobody is going to look at you like, oh, how did you not know there were 10 mash bills for Four Roses? You know, right. Like, nobody's going to do that. If you say, hey, like, could you explain to me the 10 mash bills of Four Roses? Someone at the table is probably going to say, oh, yo, you know who's really into Four Roses? This guy. Let him explain it. He's the best one to break it down, or this woman. So we just try to, like, mix it up, make sure that people who want to be there and interested have an opportunity to, like, come in, like, learn, have fun, have a good time. And that's just the way that we operate. And I think it's just very different than what else is out there in our immediate area. Like I said, both in terms of inclusion for people of color and women, and then, you know, to have a group that has levels, you know, people who are from, you know, whiskey curious to whiskey experts, is just really beneficial to everyone. Yeah. So that's just the way that we run our group. And, like, that's what we look to do. We don't look to say, oh, if, you know, you only have this many Instagram followers, or you only know this much about where your collection is this, then, like, you can't do it, you know, and, oh, it's bros only or anything like that. We just don't look at it like that. I mean, and the reason to me that that's important is, if, you know, you look at it, I can't remember what the most recent study I read on just, like, whiskey demographics and consumer demographics was, like, there were 3 million new consumers in the market. And the majority of those consumers were people of color, in particular Latin men.
Yeah.
Right? Not even, like, the biggest minority. The majority of new consumers were basically people of color, led strongly by Latin men. And then I started to think about, like, all my homeboys in Jersey who are, like, in Knights of the Leaf, who are Dominican, Puerto Rican, who used to drink something else, you know, got tired of it and started exploring whiskey. And then they all got into it. And now they're now, you know, they're where I was, you know, 5 years ago when it was like, oh, I'm trying everything, you know, and then, oh, if I'm lucky, I get to find this allocated bottle, and they're there in their journey, but there's a ton of them.
Yeah.
And they're really, like, the crux of what is the new market.
Yeah.
And so for us, I just look at it as, well, I mean, I know traditionally where these spirits come from. I know that people have a traditional assumption of what the whiskey consumer is in America, like, older white guy from the South. But the reality is, like, it's trending in a different direction. And Taste Select Repeat, you know, our group, our membership represents that and is that and demonstrates that. It's a living, breathing entity that it is that. And it isn't just to say that, like, oh, you know, it's only people of color and, you know, women. It's like, we have all sorts of people. The main thing is, it's the level of diversity is very on par for what you would think about in terms of, you know, living and operating out of New York City.
That's really important. And it's again, like, I think before I even started this conversation with you, just it's really good to hear someone that kind of echoes the same sentiment. I think about what we're trying to do in LA and in California, and just people are, like, coming from out the woodworks who have this broad knowledge or have these really specific desires of, like, yo, like, I've gone to Scotland and taking these trips to the different distilleries and, you know, Speyside and things like that, and gone to Kentucky and bring this information. Then I just think about, like, how we got introduced, you know, like, my mama drinks E&J, like, that's just her thing. And I'm like, mom, you know, we did a cognac tasting. But the whole thing was, is like, and we tell the people this all the time, there's nothing wrong with Hennessy. There's nothing wrong with Douce. There's nothing wrong with Courvoisier. I'm going to introduce you to, like, five brands that are not them. And I want you, and a lot of times we'll do, like, you know, the brown paper bag test, and we'll just say, like, can you tell me what this is? Can you tell me what's not? And a lot of times people realize, like, they can get higher quality and or pay less or pay something similar and, like, really, like, change their whole perspective on what they're doing. And so I just, like I said, to hear you kind of talk about it in a very similar way is really powerful. One thing I wanted to end on, because the first way I was actually introduced to you while I was starting my journey was your barrel picks. So, and now, and that was probably like six, maybe a year ago. And so one thing I want to feature for, on you is how would you encourage someone who's never done a barrel pick or is curious about it, how to go about it, the things that they should be interested in or looking for, okay. And what they could get out of the entire experience.
Okay. So this is an interesting one. All right. So I've now done, like I said, I think I've done 19 total in my life. I participated in 19. The majority of them have been on premise, but some of them have been done with samples. Mm-hmm. The thing that was interesting to me was I wanted to go and see like where the stuff was made. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's always important to me to like go and see and meet the people and like put a name to a face and have an understanding of like where they're coming from, right? And what I ultimately found in most of these cases is you go to these places and you're like, wow, okay, so most of these cats are like scientists. They're like have PhDs in chemistry and whatnot, and they just grew up in a different place, different lifestyle, blah 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 blah. But it's really interesting. You're generally dealing with thoughtful, intelligent people. And that to me adds something to the spirit. And I'm not just saying that, oh, that bourbon is different than anything else, because I'm sure a lot of these distilleries are like that have pedigree. But it's just really good to see, and I think it adds something to it. So that to me was, you know, I wanted to have an understanding of like the purest form of the spirit, in this case American whiskey, and to me that is the single barrel pick. Now, if you're interested in them and doing them, there are a couple ways. You can either get down with a liquor store who is going to do them, or you can bring a group to a liquor store, or there are even some distilleries now like New Riff that will let you do barrel picks through the gift shop, but you know and you have to buy them and pick them up for your group if you don't have a retail license,
right?
And those are really the ways. I mean, I got started by I can invite, you know, from my local liquor store guy to go because I just happen to have some free time. And our agreement in return was I would make the, you know, because I had media experience, I would make the stickers and help with the social media.
Yeah.
And that was the original deal we made. And that's how I came up with the DIY brand, because you can't put the stickers on in New York State on the bottles before you sell them.
Oh, wow.
So the whole idea was you have to do it yourself. You have to put the sticker on your own bottle. It comes in a kit. You sign it. And then it's yours and it's no one else's.
Right.
And I just got really excited about the idea, like kind of making them, trying to make them, make, you know, each person having something they felt it was really individually theirs. But that's the way that you get started is, you know, you have to have an alignment with a liquor store, or you can, in some cases, go to distilleries that have programs and do them. And I think New Riff is a good example of a distillery that has a program and can do them. In terms of, should I, shouldn't I, like, I guess I looked at it. I happened to, at the time when I was invited to do my first one, I had some free time in my life and I was like, what am I trying to do here? And, and you know, kind of a like little vacay in between job situation. So I just got the opportunity to explore something I wanted to do. And so I guess my basic advice is like, there are going to be those times in your life where you have an opportunity to like sit at home and sit on your butt and like sleep 14 hours a day, or you can use that time to like really pursue a goal that you have and like make it a reality. You know, I went for 2 years doing barrel picks, trying to figure out like, what's the difference between me and the retailers that I'm working with? You know, how is it that they can make all the decisions about what's being purchased and what's being sold and how the profit is made, and I can't make any of those decisions. And then one day I decided, well, I'm going to figure out how to do that. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure, you know, everyone says it's hard. This is like everything. Everyone says it's hard. And then you take some time and energy and, you know, use some of your connections to figure out, like, what you really need to do.
Yeah.
You know, and that's that. Okay, where's the state to get the license? How much is it going to cost? What information do I need to collect? Like, you know, do I need to form a company? All of those things, like all of these things are readily attainable by anyone who's motivated and, you know, even mildly educated. But I just think that, right, for us, many times people of color, like these are the things that we find difficult to attain because there's so many steps you have to go through.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many hoops you have to jump through to do it. But don't be deterred just because that's the case. Just understand it's a process. It takes time, and if you never get started, then you can never finish.
Right. Do you think time or money or those, because I think when most people think about hurdles, they're thinking about how much is this going to cost me or how long is it going to take. Was there any shock with those two factors as far as like how much is this going to cost me for a barrel or a bottle or the time?
No, I think in terms of starting the business, I mean, that's what you mean, right?
Yeah, I think, well, I think more so for a fan. So, like, I think it's one thing to do a barrel pick and then, like, we're going to go retail. If I'm in a liquor club, if I'm in a whiskey club or in a collective and it's like, hey, I want to get on with, you know, OJ's picks. I want to get five bottles off of his pick, you know. Right. Because I think that's one part is just understanding, like, hey, these are selected barrels that people are picking out and the blends and things like that. And then there's the next step, which is I'm going to do it and then I'm going to resell it for myself, right? So that's right. There's like both sides of that. Because I think some people don't even understand the fact that, you know, when you go into a certain and I'm not necessarily talking about like BevMo or Total Wine, although they have them too. But you go into certain liquor stores and they have like their own selected thing that they're reselling, which it could be like Maker's Mark is a good example. Maker's Mark, man, and you'll see the liquor store has their own barrel pick, right?
Yeah.
But what you're explaining and what we're talking about too is like, you know, there's a distillery up in El Segundo, 5 miles away from here called R6. They do really good stuff over there. And like, we're already having a conversation, like we could do a barrel with them. And when I started to tell some of our members, like, oh, okay, like it's probably going to cost us about, you know, 10, 12 grand, something like that. But we get to go through the whole process of like what the mash bill is and like certain parts of the process. And so when I started to break it down to them, like, hey, like, you know, this could yield 12 to 15 cases, depending on how much comes from it, you know, like, if we all put in X amount, I was like, look, I'll put a grand down. I'll put 5 grand. And people are like, oh, I got a grand, 5 grand, 500, whatever. And people started to realize like, yo, I could actually be a part of the process to have something that's really uniquely my own. And so I thought that was actually really cool when you start opening people's eyes to like, this is how this process works. This is how you can be a part of it.
Yeah. I mean, I do feel good about it. I will say, cause I mean, you know, there's myself. I mean, I'm just trying to think of, you know, and I was thinking about this the other day and I was like, all right, of all of the people of color I know that like actually do barrel picks, and it's not really that do them and do them consistently and regularly. It's a pretty short list mm-hmm. of the ones that I know, mm-hmm. you know, and so whenever like I'm in a scenario where I see like young people who are like, oh, you know, like some of my former like complex people like, oh, I bought your bottle. It's great. I'm like, this is really cool. Like, I'm actually opening them up to, as you were saying, like a more diverse group of things I could purchase. Like, it doesn't always have to be Henny. It could be something else. It could be gin. It could be mezcal. It could be this. It could be that. So I feel cool in terms of like, you know, am I opening up some doors? Am I making people think like there's more to this than just going to a liquor store, taking what they have on the shelf? And like, you know, yes, like, you can participate in the economy and in the process, you know, if you spend a little bit of time and energy, and then when you group up with people, it makes it really easy.
Yes.
Because if you think about it, what you're saying, the economics of what you're saying about what you guys are going to want to do is, if you know, it's 10 G's, let's say it's 10 G's for the barrel and it produces 200 bottles. Like when you sell that through your collective, that's really not that much of a down payment for every person.
No. Not at all.
You know, it's the equivalent of a bottle of champagne that you buy for somebody's birthday.
Yeah. Well, if I think about how many bottles I done spent in the club, and I'm like, wait a second. Like, I spent $1,000 for two bottles in Vegas once, and like, are you telling me I can probably get a case for the same amount? Yeah. Like, yo, what am I doing?
So I think that, you know, a lot of it definitely feels very clandestine when you're starting out. Like, you know, you're working with the retailer and they don't want to tell you what the wholesale cost is or what they're going to sell it for and this and that and the other thing. And, you know, you can't talk to this one, you can't talk to that one. And that was part of the part where I was like, yeah, well, I know I'm participating in the supply chain and I want to participate for myself and make my own decisions. And once you do that, I mean, the response that I've gotten from all the brands that I've either worked with so far in terms of have done picks with them, or brands that I've been introduced to, has been great. They're really excited that we're doing this, you know? And I think for them, it's because it makes it it just makes it easier to look at what the new consumers are and get help that they know they need to reach those consumers.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's no fault of, like I said, every place I've been, like when I show up at a distillery with Pierre, who's also a man of color, and Sean, who's you know, also a man of color because he's Korean, the guy who owns 58 Wine, it's usually pretty funny. People are usually a little bit like of a double take, like, who are these guys?
Right.
You know,
which
is cool. And, you know, like, you know, all of that is about how you take it and whether or not somebody intended it a certain way. And my general experience is like, nobody has intended any ill will towards me in any of the places I've been. They're just surprised to see new people.
Yeah.
But they're happy about it. It's like, you know, when you go down to Kentucky, they're happy about it, man, because their economy has been in the can. And now they have people coming from other places who are spending money in their state. So if you're a person who wants to do business, you don't care where people are coming from. You care whether or not they want to do business.
Yeah.
And that's what I found is like people generally want to do business and they are fairly flexible and cool and, you know, they're happy to be sharing something that's probably been in, you know, generationally in their families that they've been around for quite some time. So for me, it's just, I feel very positive that I've been able to show people like, hey, look, like there's a whole other thing here.
Yeah.
You know, there's a whole other thing here and it isn't, while it takes time and energy to understand what it is and then to seek it out, it isn't exclusive in many cases in terms of what you can or can't get.
Yeah.
You know, so, and in my mind, it's also great to be a champion of like American made products. Mm. You know, to me, it's a patriot to be like, hey, we have this great craft in this country and I want people to know about it and I want people to see it. And I very much think of myself that way.
I want to end this and I feel like I've already gone over my time, but one thing that I really tried to instill from James Lipton and everything is kind of like the end on this questionnaire. And so this is meant to be kind of rapid fire, but have fun with it.
All right.
And then we'll get out of here. All right. The Sip Mightily questionnaire. Number one, what's your favorite thing to sip?
The old school Elijah Craig 12. Big Red. That was my favorite bourbon ever.
What's your least favorite thing to sip?
Vodka.
Okay. What's your favorite experience with the spirit? The time when you had a chance to celebrate and you're like, yo, that was, you know, everybody be like, yo, that was a movie. What was your movie moment at the time when you was sipping or drinking or just having a good time?
Okay. Let's see. I've had a few. So I've definitely, when I worked at Complex, I remember we had our Christmas party one year and we were killing it on the internet. We were just throwing up so many page views and millions of visitors. It was like unheard of. And it was total youth sneaker rap culture. And we went after our Christmas card at the club that year. And we went through like five bottles of champagne with my editorial team and they were all kids.
Yeah.
So they were all in their 20s. I'd hired them all. I'd built that editorial team. We had launched so many things. We had made the company so much money. And this was like, while all of them could get into the club, none of them could afford to be in the club. And it was one of those chances where we got to celebrate. And I was like, yo, it's on me. And we just were popping crazy bottles of champagne. That's, I think, my club champagne moment.
There it is.
I would say my favorite moment in terms of celebrating was the day that DIY won my first barrel pick came in. I'd been so meticulous about the stickers and the packaging, and I still knew there were things that could be improved. But the day I went down to Sean's shop, 58 Wine and Liquor, and I took my first bottle out and I put the sticker on and I signed it, you know, and then we sipped some. That's like a moment that will live on because it's like, you know, it's day one for me.
Man. Yeah, that's awesome. What's your least favorite experience or least your worst time you've had with a spirit, and you can share or not share accordingly?
Well, I mean, we've all had those moments. We've all had those moments.
Was it the night after the Christmas party?
Right. It was the day after.
Yeah.
No, I got to say, I haven't had any horrible moments in a long time in terms of like hungover, throwing up. I just want to die. I'll never drink again. That hasn't happened in decades. I'm responsible about the way that I drink. So, but I did have some of those moments when I was in my 20s for sure.
Is there something you've always wanted to try? And that could be spirits or otherwise.
As in try that I've never tasted or?
Yes.
Okay. I want to try, I want to do like the French, the French wine tour.
Okay.
I want to do like the Burgundy. I want to do that whole area. Like, I don't know, you know, there used to be times when I would go with my wife to the West Coast and do their wine stuff and done that a few times. It's been awesome, but I've never been to France and I don't know a lot about wine. So for me, that would be, you know, something to do as fun.
Who would you like to, you know, everybody's like, oh, I would like to have a beer with this person. Well, who would you like to have drinks with? It could be anybody.
In the world, Obama.
Obama. Okay.
Obama, of course, man. The goat, man.
What do you think Obama drinks? Like, I kind of picture him as like Johnny Walker blue guy, but then I feel like he probably got some stuff that we've still never seen before.
Yeah. I don't know, man. You know, he looks like a sophisticated dude, so I could see him with some scotch. Remember, he used to smoke cigarettes, too. He quit that.
He did. We think he quit.
Himself, he keeps himself real fit. He looks to me like, I'll just have a cool little beer, good American craft beer kind of a guy. I don't know if he does the hard spirits, man.
If I give you a golden ticket to any game show, what do you pick? But the caveat is you have to win, or you have to experience your least favorite experience with a spirit all over again. What game show do you pick?
Okay. So you got to be on a game show.
Yes, but you have to win it. Or you have other consequences.
Jeopardy. I'm going to go Jeopardy because that one looks the most challenging.
Okay.
You know, and what, you know, it's always good to get a challenge. It makes it worth more when you win.
There it is.
And what would the grand prize be?
Well, the grand prize is just you get to win, of course, the prizes at a game show. But if you lose, if you do not win this game show, then you have to experience number four again, which was your terrible hangover the day after your Christmas party while working the complex.
I try Jeopardy for that.
Okay, fair enough. What favorite pair of sneakers of all time?
Air Jordans. For sure, man. So mine were the Jordan 5s because I played ball in them in high school.
Okay.
1 year. That's, you know, dating myself. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the shark teeth, those were always my favorites, man.
If you are a WWE wrestler or a Major League Baseball player, what's your walk-up or entrance music?
What's my walk-up or entrance music? That's – okay. Definitely rap.
I could tell you mine. I mean,
go ahead, give me yours.
So when me and my wife got married, I always had this vision. I was like, yo, I'm going to walk in the future. I'm going to walk into March Madness. And so we got these dope photos of us coming in, getting turned to March Madness. It was a movie as a kid might used to say back in the day. So that's mine, March Madness for sure.
Okay. Jay-Z, Big Pimpin'.
All right. And then finally, what are you cheering to now? What's the thing that's keeping you happy, keeping you going during this time? What's your cheers moment right now?
In terms of music?
No, just cheers as far as celebrating, man. What's got you happy? What's keeping you positive?
I think what's keeping me positive is I actually set about trying to accomplish a lot during quarantine, right? And I know everyone doesn't have that privilege that I happen to have in that regard, but I just looked at the situation. I was like, wow, this is going to be really negative, and you can let it swallow you up, or you can actually attempt to like accomplish something. And so for me, you know, I was able to, during this time, see my business through to, you know, to creation. I was able to drop 6 barrel picks and then also spend a lot of time, you know, with my family. So I just looked at it like, I'm not going to roll over on this and just be sad. I'm going to try to make the best possible out of it. And just, you know, all of that focus has just actually been really beneficial for me. You know, it's really made me think differently about how I worked in corporate media for 25 years and how I'm going to work as I move into running my own business on my own, and kind of what kind of manager, what kind of, you know, business partner and businessman I'm going to be.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the Sip Mightily podcast. Hopefully that was fun. Hopefully you enjoyed OJ's commentary and everything he has to offer to bourbon and barrel picking and just living that life. Thank you for riding along with this experiment. We're going to do this more often. We're going to have more of my friends and family and loved ones on. And we're just going to kick back and have a good time. So sip mightily, do it big, and we'll see you next time. Peace.